Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Just gonna sing a little song. I hate speaking, but hopefully I'll leave. What I mean by that is, like, halfway through you start, like, you know, you get into the juice, and then all of a sudden you're like, you know, it's gone, and you forget where you are. But right now it's like, it's really weird for me to. Usually, I don't know, if it was in the bar, I'd be like dancing by now, you know what I mean? But I guess I did the 12 steps, right? And I found out how self-centered I was, like everything's about me. So then you get put out, you know, like, hey, you speak for an hour? It's like, sure. You know, like it's like a trick, you know what I mean? I don't know. Should I stand back here? All right, so what my job is as a speaker is to say, talk about what it was like, what it's like, what happened, and then what it's like now. That used to mean, it changed for me. Now it's like what it used to be like without a higher power and thinking I didn't need a higher power. And then what happened to realize I need a higher power to live with, next to. Or alongside. Ooh. And then what it's like having a conscious contact with a higher power. It's amazing. Like, if I were to tell somebody who was like just walked in, what, like, try to explain this, it would be like totally unbelievable. Because it's hard for me to believe such a simple idea actually. Works. It's got to be more complicated than that. You know what I mean? It's got to be more complicated than that. It's got to be, all these variables have to be set in place, and everything has to work and gel. But it's really one, there's one solution. And this meeting, I used to come to this meeting because I moved to this area. And what you do when you move, and you're in AA, you move to a new area, you get a new set of meetings, and you start going, and you start saying, I'm new to the area, and you start meeting new people, and you get involved, right? That's what you're supposed to do as a good AAer, right? And so that's what I did. I moved up here from Doylestown, and I figured out where I'm going to go Tuesdays was Zion. Wednesdays was Red Hill, and Thursdays was Izzy's, and Mondays was this Mennonite church on Allentown Road. And so I come in, and I'm like, let's say I had about a year sober when I moved. Got sober in 2006. So this year, this is my 10 years, which is, I'll tell you about that in a minute, because this was, it's amazing. I'm not only sober, but I'm sober and happy. Like, I didn't think those two could go along, sober and happy. What's up? sober and happy. I can tell you that. I'm not, and I believe in this power, this higher power, the God, the spirit of the universe, the creative intelligence. I believe it now. It's not just what you guys believed in, and I had to, you know, pretend to or act as if. I actually believe there's something going on here. There's something going on here, and I've only heard it. I can only accept hearing it from people just like you guys. You know what I mean? I love you guys. I love drunks. They're my favorite types of people. Partiers are my favorite. Always have been my favorite types of people. I grew up with them as parents and siblings and. Anyway, I forget where I was. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm just going to go all over the place. Typically, my brain goes, like, I'll be talking, and then my brain's already thinking about something else. I don't know if you can relate to that. And then I'll just go into that, and I forget completely what I was talking about. What was I talking about? So I come to this. I sit over there with Phil, right? And we're sitting over there, and I'm thinking, the guy's talking for the whole hour. he's talking the whole hour, and he's like from Maryland or something. And I'm like, when's it my turn to share? You know, this isn't how you do AA. Like, this, they're doing it all wrong over here in Quakertown. And I'm like, that's weird. This is weird. This is such a weird move. And of course, I've had my I'm fine face. You know, like you sit over there and you're like, no one talk to me because I'm fine. So you put your I'm fine face on, and that you're in AA with an I'm fine face. That's dangerous. I found out because, I wasn't, but I didn't know I was. I didn't know I wasn't. It's just like, I don't believe until I believe. Like, I can't believe it. It's not true. It's not real until you believe. Then it's real, you know? So maybe I'll get into that too. But so I'm sitting there, but there was something going on here. There was something going on. Every Monday I was here, and every Monday I'd walk in, and there were like a gang of people at the door. Like, we called them the God Squad. You know, they'd be like, hi, how are you? And they waited for an answer. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, normally you're like, hey, what's up? But you don't really expect people to say what's up. You know, they actually tell you what's up. But these guys would stand there and be like, how are you? How you doing? You all right? Like, hey, how you doing? You okay? Like, I'd be like, fine. You know, can't you see my face? I'm fine. You know, but every week there was this one guy, and he would stare at me and just be like, I don't know, he'd look right into my soul, man. He would just look at me and be like, how you doing? How you doing? And I thought for sure, I just thought he liked me. You know what I mean? Which is cool. I have plenty of gay friends. I have a gay son. It's okay. So I just figured, you know, it was flattering. You know, he was cool. Whatever. And so week after week, they had these speakers from all over, like York or Connecticut or Jersey. You know, the speakers would come in. And every week I was here, man, and there was something going on. There was talking about, like, God dependency, helping others dependency, and trusting higher powers, and, this message, this solution message. So every week I'd be there, and I'd be like, man, like, there's something. I was very interested. And this one home group member, Sandy, who's not here tonight, I didn't see her, but she spoke, and she told her story, and it was awesome. It was a great story. It's like she had, like, I don't know, 20 years, and she saw this guy coming and going. He was miserable, and then he, like, transformed, and so she went up to him, and she was like, oh, my God. Like, what happened to you? You're totally different. You look like a totally different. He's like, I went through the steps. I went through the steps. I went through just like the way the founders did it, out of the big book, and I have purpose. And you know, he's like, and she's like, wow, it's amazing the transformation that happened to you. And, she's up here, and she's telling her story. And she's like, so I asked him, can you show me? And he said, sure, why not? And he took her through, I guess. And since then, she's been helping newcomers and taking people through the steps. So after she shared, I went up to her, I thanked her, and I said, Sandy, something's going on here. And I said, do you still know this person? Is he, you know, around? And she goes, yeah. And I said, think he can help me? And she says, yeah, sure, come here. It's Chris. And it was the guy at the door, Chris. And I'm like, oh, no, not him. And I was convinced I had nothing in common with the guy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I'm nothing like that. I'm not going to like him. They call it contempt. And I was, I just was convinced, you know, I had nothing in common with him. So it turns out, I won't get into it all, but, you know, I'll take you through the steps with me. But during the fifth step, fourth, fifth, he would start talking about his stuff. And it turns out, like, we drank the same, we made the same awful mistakes and decisions out there, and I just trusted him at that moment, and I just trusted him so much that I just told him everything, like the stuff I was not going to tell anybody ever, and it just rolled off my tongue like nothing, and you know, he would say things like, me too. Bless you. And me too, and so did I, and it's okay, and stuff like that. And nothing really happened. Like the fifth step promises, if you read the big book, they got, like, someone can show you if you don't know what I mean. It's like promises on every step, and a lot of them come true, and have come true for me. promises definitely came true, as promised, but not when I thought they would. A lot of this happens in hindsight, like looking back. You know, man, you just keep trucking, just keep going, and all of a sudden, it's like suddenly you realize, oh, yeah, you know, I handled that situation that used to baffle me, you know, or whatever. Like, I would have been baffled, you know. No one really talks like that. You know what else? No one really, I never said joy so much as I do now. Like, who says joy? Who walks around and says, I feel joyful. But I do. I know what that means. I know what it means to feel joy, to know peace. I got three older sisters, mom and dad, who loved each other. So I was the youngest and, you know, the son. So I got away with murder. Not literally, but, like, I got away with a lot, you know. Plus my sisters, you know, like I said, we were a partying family. Like, all our neighbors knew growing up that, you know, the Ward House was the party house. So by the time I got to high school, I was having these keggers, and we would never get busted because the cops knew, you know, everybody knew that it was pretty much something's going on at the Ward's house. So it was pretty cool growing up. Not a lot of consequences. As my friends got older, like, we had stuff hanging in the basement drying out, you know. We had the Frisbee underneath the couch, you know what I mean? Right? Back then they had seeds, you know. Now it's, anyway. So that's how we grew up, and it was like stuff you don't talk about outside the house. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, like, my friends, you go, I sleep over at my friend's house. It wasn't like my house. You know what I mean? So, not that I felt different. I just assumed it was like a, I don't know. But anyway, as my friends got older, like 6th, 7th grade, like the first time I got high was with my older sisters. I was in 5th grade, and it wasn't like I asked. They were like, let's get Johnny high, you know, like, and then watch him, you know, like, I don't know. So it was a lot of, like, showing off and daredevil stuff growing up. But so by the time, like, I 6th grade, I got drunk for the first time. Like, I always had sips of dad's beer, but I got drunk for the first time in the summer before 6th grade. I remember when my kids were that age, and I'm thinking, damn. I was so young, but I don't know. You hear that, kind of hear that about that age a lot in the rooms, right? So anyway, nothing magical happened. I remember the room spinning. I remember not caring about a damn thing, and that kind of followed me along. That when I was drunk that night, we're at Peace Valley Park, and driving home from the park, the guy was with my older sister again, and anyway, driving home, I just remember hanging with my head out the window. We're going around these curves, and I remember thinking, we're going to hit a tree and die. And I remember not caring. Kind of morbid, but I just remember, like, not caring about anything, like, nothing. I was in the now, you know. I don't know, someone said, put your foot on the floor when you're sleeping, like, when you're lying in bed and the room's spinning, you put your foot on the floor. It did work. But, I don't know, get my mind off it for a little bit. So that was the first time I got drunk, like drunk. And, you know, I didn't really get it a lot. I couldn't really, I guess I could go to my fridge and get it, but it wasn't like, I don't know, I didn't need to drink after that or anything. And then 7th grade, a couple of my friends got interested, you know, like my dad's work truck. He was a roofer, and he had, like, the work guys that work with him. And, in the ashtray, you can always find, we call it the Roach Motel, you know. You can always, so I could always find something. And as my friends got curious, I had already had the, you know, the sources, right? So, and then it was just experimentation through that. But just to move on, I call her, it's my sister, Sue. She was my lighthouse. Again, Looking back, she got into some trouble, went to a place called Eagleville, and She came out of this Eagleville, and she was going to these meetings, a new set of friends, and I didn't know anything about recruiting. The only thing I knew about AA was my dad had a roofing buddy, Sammy the Roofer, from Germantown, and Sammy was sober in AA. The only thing I knew about AA. He was crazy, too. Like my mom used to say, get a horse thief sober, and now you have a sober horse thief. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know his story, but. Anyway, so my sister gets clean, and she's going to meetings, a new set of friends, and they're all cool. They're all the same partiers I love to hang out with and idolized. But they were all going to these meetings, and they were all hanging out, you know, on their front porch, just like before, but no one was smoking up or drinking or anything. So I was like, wow, that's weird. But it was just, I figured, I'm happy for her, and I'm glad she's, you know, cleaning up her act, and she was on fire, you know. The light came on in her eyes, and she was just beautiful. But a couple years later, she's got a few years, and it was one of those mornings, you know. I mean, we're in AA, we all probably had those mornings where you're like, oh, my God. What did I do? I can't believe I, you know, whatever. It's like, whatever the scenario, it was one of those mornings where I was like, what am I doing? You know, I was like 18 or 19, and I called her from a payphone. She picked me up, and I was like, I think I should go to your meetings. And she's like, yeah, try it out, you know. She was cool about it, and I started going to NA. And I was there. I got like 6 or 8 key tags. I forget. But I figured it out, see, and I'm the type, I got to figure this out, and then I'll be fine. Like, I just got to figure it out, I'll be fine. I'm not that bad, you know, especially after you get clean for a little bit. Like, after a month, you're like, it wasn't so bad, you know. That's another dangerous spot. So I figured it out, because they had steps and sponsors and stuff, not that I paid attention to it, but we would sit in the back and shoot rubber bands and go to dances in Philly and just have a good old sober clean time, and it was fun. It was a group of guys, some of the guys I went to high school with, I hooked up with, and we had a lot of fun, sober clean fun, and I figured it out. I figured if I just lived by spiritual principles and just smoke pot and drink beer, I'll be fine. So right, and Rastas do it right. So I figured I'll be a Rasta from now on, and I'll be fine. I'll just live by spiritual, not that I knew what spiritual principles were, but I figured that was my plan. My plan was I was just going to not do that anymore, or that anymore, or that anymore, and I won't, you know, I'll just be, you know, I'll be fine. I went on to try and prove that for years. A couple things happened, and then, like, one, my dad died. He got cirrhosis, and that's where I was going with the 10-year things. I'm 49 right now. He was 49 when he died. So 10 years ago, it was another bottom. And 10 years ago, I'm like, am I going to be dead in 10 years like my dad? Or am I going to be sober and happy like my sisters? Now I had 2 sisters in the rooms. And 10 years later, I'm sober and happy. So something's working, man. Something's happening. Something happened. So my dad, he ended up dying from this disease, horrible, horrible death. I watched him, you know, turn yellow, fluids. You know, it was an alcoholic death, man. It was awful. You guys would have dug him too. Like, he was cool. Like, I wish he was here, you know. He never got a chance. A couple guys went to his hospital room and gave him a coin, and they talked to him for a couple hours or whatever, and I still know both those cats today. You know, carry the message or be the message. The message is this shit will kill us. You know, we keep going the way we go, doing what we do. I do this thing once in a while at the Tuesday night big book study for some sober houses that I help out with, and I'll just do it now because it's like, how many of us in the last 1 year know someone personal to us that passed away from this disease? Raise your hand. Look at that. That's more than half the room. You know what I mean? We got to get out. There's a way out. And for me, it wasn't just meetings. Like, I love meetings. I love going to meetings. But some of the best AA I've ever discovered and witnessed and experienced was, like, on my back porch. The best AA I've ever had happened to me was at my sponsor's living room with a cup of black coffee you could stand a spoon up in. And some of the best AA I've ever saw, lights go on, was in my truck in this parking lot after the meeting. You know what I mean? Some of the best AA meetings aren't at the meetings. None of this makes sense. Some of the best AA happens on the way here. Right? So, I don't know. I can't explain it. I can't explain that if you take these steps are nothing more than a formula to introduce you to a power greater than yourself. And you don't even have to believe in it. All you got to do is believe some dude believes in it. I didn't believe in this. I sat at my sponsor's coffee table and he said, "Do you believe I believe?" Chris. He said, "Do you believe I believe?" And I said, "Yeah, you're the God guy." Like, the guy had a Bible, I swear to God. And he had like God pictures in his house, like on purpose. Yeah. And so he was the God guy. To me, he believed in God. And he said, "Okay, step three." I was like, "Wait a minute. Step two is that simple? Step two is all I have to do is believe that you believe? That there's possible something out there? It's possible that something can help me that I don't believe in because I can't see it or touch it or feel it or my old ideas were that the God was, for me, it was a Catholic thing, and we were only Catholic. Like I said, my parents were hippies. We went to church on Christmas and Easter. And we were late. And my dad was pissed off. You know, like, hurry up. Okay. I don't know. But so that was what I thought, and I thought you had to be religious to believe in God, and that's not true either. And I believe, for me, the spiritual, that thing, that God, that it, that she, that he, or whatever, it's in all of us, right? And it's a light, like a spark that we're born with, and I believe myself put it out or dimmed it, and you brought it back to life. Like you sparked, and then you get on fire. Like once you get on fire, you can't help but spew it. You know what I mean? Like you know what I mean, right, Mike? Like you're fire, man. Like something's going on with that guy. He's changed. I see it happening with these guys at the book study. You know, they come in, you know, punk ass thug. You know, it's all good. But then, like a few months later, they got a sponsee, and they've been through the steps, and they're lit up. Like, I don't know what's in those vapes, but it's some God juice. Some God juice in those vapes. Man, you can bottle that and sell that. Woo-wee. So believe it or not, there is something out there. And believe it or not, I was afraid of it. I was afraid to believe. I was afraid not to believe. You know what I mean? I remember, like, so I went out, right? I went out, and my dad died. My girlfriend was pregnant. There's just all these decisions, and, you know, everything was just piling up all around me. And I was like, man, I'm checking out. And I just drank a lot all the time. And then my daughter was born. And then I'll just go quickly through this because it's, you know, it's like, bad decision, get clean. But it's not. It's my story. And my story is I didn't know what to do. And what I did know how to do is to check out, to, you know, sedation. And I did that in various forms, you know. So it was like, I forget, it was foggy. Go figure. But it was, I don't know if I was married yet or not. I really can't figure that out. I don't really care. But I was with a marriage counselor, a one-on-one session, and and I'm telling her my story up to this point, right? Like I'm telling you guys, and she's like, whoa, slow down. She said, you went to meetings, and your sisters and your dad, she's like, do you drink now? I'm like, yeah, you know. And I smoke a little weed, drink, you know. Well, how much do you drink? You know, do you drink daily? I'm like, yeah, but just a couple six packs, no big deal, you know. Right? Compared to what? You know what I mean? Compared to what I used to drink, or compared to what my dad drank, or compared to what I wanted to drink? Like, compared to what? Compared to what? I wasn't so bad. But apparently it's not normal, you know. So she's like, well, maybe your relationship would get better if you didn't drink so much, and maybe you should go back to those meetings. And so I'm 24, I think. Yeah. And I go back to AA this time. And I do AA. And I do AA my way, not the way, or your way, or the way. I do it my way, which is go to a meeting right at the bell and leave right at the bell. Don't hold hands. Don't pray. Don't talk to anybody. And don't drink. I'm in AA now. And that's my interpretation of what you do in AA. It's as much as I knew. And so I went to AA. But see, when I stopped drinking, and I've done it a few different times, a few different ways, never this way. This is the only thing that's helped me stay stopped and not even care, not even think about it. Removed. Imagine that. It's real. Truth. Anyway, so there was a sobriety group in Southampton and the Flower Town group in Flower Town. And they had a meeting. The clubhouse was above a bar, which I always thought was cool. All right, remember that? And so I would go and, right at the bell, wouldn't talk to anybody, didn't know anybody, didn't care to. I just figured, I'm not going to drink today, I'm going to hit a meeting. But the meetings went away because when I stop drinking, like, stuff gets old quick. You know what I mean? I got a couple months and I'm like, what else could I do? You know, like, so I didn't drink, I didn't even smoke that either. So I would work a lot, like work, you know, I get these obsessions, like I gotta do something, you know what I mean? It's gotta be, and I took up fishing. I was fishing alcoholically. I was golfing alcoholically, even though I sucked. But my yard had divots all over the place, you know, like I was practicing my grip, watching my kids grow up, you know what I mean? But I don't know, I never got any good at it. Working a lot. Lying, cheating, stealing peace of mind from the people around me. Living dirty, not drinking, and no meetings. Like the meetings went away. Like if my sisters came over, I'd hit a meeting or something, you know. Or if somebody was in town, you know, like somebody, oh yeah, because I wasn't drinking now, and I'm in AA, but I really wasn't. You know what I mean? I was just hitting a meeting now and then, and so life, and I'm working, business, you know. Da, da, da. And I did that, I don't know how, compared to what I've learned and the awarenesses that come from actually getting into this, excuse me, I don't know how I did it. I did it for 6 years, 30 years old, I picked up again. See, I didn't know I was doomed. I didn't know if you got this thing. I didn't know a lot. Like, I thought, I'm an alcoholic, I can't drink. Well, I'm an alcoholic, and if I don't drink, well, now I got alcoholism. Like, alcoholism kicks in when I stop drinking. What? Yeah. Like, I suffer from alcoholism if unless I drink. It's one way, right? Well, I've proven that over and over, that I can't do that successfully. I cannot drink successfully. Oh, the hangovers. Oh, the broken promises. Oh, the, you know, bad decisions. Or, like, I quit drinking, but now I'm buying 8-balls. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like the flip-flop and the rationalization and the justification. I didn't know I was doomed. It doesn't go away. It's progressive. You know what I mean? Those 6 years that I was not drinking, when I picked up within a month, I was exactly, like, I never stopped. It didn't pick up where it left off. It picked up like I never stopped. And it was a mess. But I fought it, and I pretended, and I put on this face of I'm okay. I would try and prove to myself and the people around me that I was okay, you know, and just fighting it. It's such a battle, you know what I mean? You surrender. That surrender comes in, and it's like a relief. It's like, oh my God, I don't have to do it anymore. But I fought it, and I went on until I was 39, 38, and I went into rehab, and it was nothing really happened. I mean, I've had DUIs, like a lot that I didn't get caught for, and a lot that I got caught for. But when I got them, it wasn't as bad as it is today. You know what I mean? Like, I had 3 DUIs, but nothing really followed me. You know what I mean? Like, it's different today. And a grand mal seizure, you know, I guess that was one of those when I quit drinking on my own. I don't remember, to be honest. But I did. It all happened. I got all kinds of war stories and stuff. But the thing, when I was 38 years old, I got, I just hit the bottom that was this bottom. I mean, it was the bottom of, I can't do it anymore. I can't. I was an alcoholic junkie that was afraid not to use. I was afraid not to drink. I didn't know if I could go to sleep without being drunk. I was drinking vodka, and in the morning it was puking. Nothing was coming out. You know, it was like I was living. I had a store in Doylestown, and I was living behind the counter with a sleeping bag. And 3 kids and a crazy relationship. And I just can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. And I went into Aldi in Doylestown, and I told them the truth. I went to group, told them the truth. I went to a meeting that night, and I haven't looked back. I jumped into AA like a sponge and just soaked it up, you know. This woman, I love her. I forget her name, but Justine, I think. She was nuts, and I love her. She came to me my first week of AA in Doylestown, and she goes, "Welcome to our pond." And I was like, what a weird thing to say. She's like, "There's plenty of room in our pond." I haven't forgotten it, but it was cool because she was, the metaphor was, come on in, you know what I mean? And you can swim against the current, or you can go with the flow, you know what I mean? And it wasn't a pond, it was a stream, the stream of life, you know what I mean? So now, I go with the flow, I see what I can bring along, I see who I can help, and I see what I can, like it says in the big book, pack into the stream of life. And it's a natural flow. This is natural. Believing in a higher power, God, or whatever you want to call it, is natural. It makes sense now. Before, I was against it, and I was afraid of it, really. Do step work on, God was on my 4-step list. My sponsor was like, good, at least you believe. And I'm like, good point. So, so I go along and you get these little nuggets, right? You get these little like spiritual nuggets along the way. Like all of a sudden you're like, they call them God shots or coincidences or whatever. But you get these little shots of like, oh my God, it's hope, really, it's hope. And you're like, things are going to be okay. I'm on the right path. I'm doing the right thing. I'm glad I'm sober. I'm glad I'm going to meetings. I'm glad I met that guy, or I'm glad I heard that. I went to the meeting and they said exactly what was on my mind. Like, how often, you know what I mean? Like, so you get these little nuggets and you think, like, you do some step work and you get some, like, fifth step and thorough 4-step and awarenesses, and you realize your grosser defects of character and all these things. They're all going through the program, which, by the way, I always thought AA meetings were the program. It's not. The program's the steps. Like, I mean, you guys are like, duh, but I didn't know that. I thought I was in the program. How come I'm not feeling better? Well, all I was doing was going to meetings. See what I'm saying? Like, the meetings are great. You hear a lot of great stuff, and there's a lot of like-minded people there. And there's people walking around AA that are just, they feel responsible to help you. You know what I mean? They say, I am responsible. When anyone reaches out, I want the hand of AA to be there. You know? So there's people in AA that their mission, their purpose is to help somebody. So if someone wants to help you, you're actually helping them. Another one. It doesn't make any sense, but it's true. There I go again. So yeah, the awarenesses and the that come up. I'm just babbling because I forget where I was. God shots? Yeah, spiritual nuggets, my man. So you get these spiritual nuggets, and you go, and you're like, wow, this is awesome. It's real. You know, now you got something that's like, whoa, I had an experience. An experience is you can relate to, and you're like, wow, this is awesome. And you're like, I never had one of these. I've never had it. This is great. You know, and you're like, mine. I'm keeping that nugget. You know, you're like, I got a spiritual nugget. But what you don't realize, what I didn't realize was there's more. You know what I mean? Like, you do some step work, you get this okay, and you never felt this okay before. Like, I never felt as good as I felt at certain plateaus, right? You're like, wow, this is awesome. This is great. I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be doing this. This is my purpose. And then I get laxed, right? I get laxed, and I'm like, all right, got my nugget. I'm good to go. What I don't realize is there's 9th step, and there's 10th step, 11th step, 12th step, taking someone else through the steps. All these things are like different plateaus and different. What I've realized is it's not, you don't just get the nugget. You've tapped into the whole vein. It's endless vein of spiritual juice. and it's like there, and it goes on forever. And that's continuing, like the continuance. Like, I thought getting through the 12 steps was the end. Getting through the 12 steps is just the beginning. Another one they got me on. 12 steps, and now you got to take someone else through the steps. So now you got sponsee, right? And now you're taking them through the steps, but you're actually going through the steps yourself again. Ah, so you never leave the steps. And you're always in the steps. So then, because now dude's making 9-step amends, and you're like, I better make my 9-step amends. You know, I better get busy. So it keeps you in the loop. You stay in the loop, and that's the loop where I got to be. Because I need this. It's natural. I need this. I get as thirsty for this God stuff or this spiritual intelligence, this creative intelligence, this, you know, whatever this thing is, that's in me, it's in you, it's in everyone. It comes out through us like a little kid. I get excited like a little kid. And this just keeps on flowing until it doesn't. And then I got to get back in there. But it doesn't have to. It's like my own fault. You know what I mean? It's like my own self-sabotage or something. If I did a conscious 11th step every night, that'd be great. But I don't. Like, why not? You know what I mean? Why don't I do it? But things have progressively gotten better. You know what I mean? I used to have to actually consciously pray. Like, okay, I'm going to pray now. Now is the time to pray. I'm going to pray now. Then I would pray. And it morphed into a thought life. The prayer is my thought life. So the prayer is a continuous thing. Like what I think about the most in any given day, and I think this is for anybody alive, not just people in AA, what they think about the most is their higher power for that minute. That's a scary thought. So I heard that somewhere. I'm like, geez. No wonder why I got to get rid of resentments. Because if I'm twisted up about dude or, you know, some sort of resentment, now they're my higher power. I don't want that as my higher power, right? So how do you get rid of a resentment? You know what I mean? I either have to forgive them or go apologize or make amends. And that usually takes care of it. So I get resentments. I get self-centered, you know, just because I did a third step and a fourth step and realized I was self-centered little baby when I don't get my way. You know what I mean? The king baby thing. Like, it doesn't mean I'm not now. Like, I have to watch for it. So, yeah, spiritual, and my God, actually I have my phone, I have a list. It says, my God is at the top. It's in my notes, right? And on the left-hand column, I made a column, and on the right, I made a column. Everything is on the left, and nothing is on the right in my phone. So my God is everything or he's nothing. So whenever I think of anything that is anything or everything, I put that down. Like something. I'm not going to read it to you. But there's nothing in my nothing column. See what I'm saying? Like, it's everything. Like, situations, feelings. He's everything or he's nothing. So if I'm going to believe, it's kind of far-fetched. Like I said in the beginning, if you don't believe this, you don't believe it. But if you do believe it, then you know what I'm talking about. Like, it's such a simple thing, you know, to depend on and rely upon a power greater than yourself. It sounds so simple when you say it, but it's hard, man. It's hard to do when you're self-centered like me. You know, I've heard it somewhere. Chuck C. says, there's only one problem, and it encompasses all problems. It's a constant separation. There's only one solution, and encompasses all solution is a constant contact, conscious contact, or something like that, to that effect. And it's true. It's just not easy for a human like me, because I am human, and that means I'm spiritually imperfect. You know, I don't want to. I'm far from getting this or got it. Like, here's an example. You know, they say, like, my will, your will. My will, his will. Like, thy will, not mine, be done. You know what I mean? Like, me on my own juice. Or being having a conscious contact with God. I was on my way here. It was September. It was a beautiful day. I had my brother-in-law's bike. He let me borrow it. And I guess it was a year ago, September. All right? So not this past September, September before that. And he's got this bike. It's all badass. I forget the names, but it's like an Electric Glide or something, but it's got a Screaming Eagle motor, and it's just bad, bad to the bone bike. Loud, right? So I'm like, flying up here, and I'm coming up early, right? And I'm going to come up in their parking lot, and I'm going to pull in the parking lot, and people are going to, you know. See where I'm going? So I come up, and I'm like I said, it's early. I'm taking back roads, and And I'm like, oh, I'll go to Wawa, and I'll, you know, profile there for a little while and drink my coffee, you know. So I pull into Wawa down here, and I'm like, you know. And I'm like, what a dork, you know. But anyway, so I'm sitting at Wawa, I get my coffee, and I'm sitting there, and I look over, and there's a wallet on the big, fat wallet. And it's like right over there, and I'm like, right away, I'm like, shit you not. Right in my pocket. The dope fiend move. And I'm like, I'm running with it. This is a year. I got 10 years sober. I got sponsees. I've been through the steps. I run a freaking book study. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm in. And here I am. I go in the Wawa. I swear to God, I go in the Wawa and I, right here. I go into the stall, like a dope fiend, and I'm like, I'm looking, you know, by the time I walk from the, where I picked it up to Wawa, to the, I'm thinking there's like $500-$600 cash, you know, this is all in my mind. I'm like, man, this is going to, fucking cha-ching, you know. And I get in, there's $18, and it's some old, like, woman wallet. She dropped her wallet, you know what I mean? And I'm just, like, looking at myself. I'm in the stall, and I'm like, I can't believe you. This is me in the stall with this stupid wallet. And I'm like, you're such a dork. Look at you. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. I can't believe you went all, and I'm picturing it in my head. That's why I told it that way, because, like, it was just dirtbag. Like, here I go. Just on my will, I'm a freaking dirtbag. And I'm like, you're such a dork. And I was like, all right, well, I get my phone out, and I'm like, I GPS her address. It's like 7 minutes away, and I'm a half an hour early for the meeting. So I'm like, you're a dork. I'm taking the wallet to her. You know what I mean? So I get on a bike, and I fly down 663. And I pass her road because I couldn't have the GPS out. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, there it was. So I turn back around, I go up, and I find the house. And it's this beautiful old farmhouse. And I'm like, blah, 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 blah. You know, now I'm like Mr. Do-Gooder, right? I'm like, taking back her wallet. Fucking dirtbag. So Do-Gooder's in her driveway, and I'm like, I'm making noise, you know, so they think the Hell's Angels are there, you know. And I'm like, rah-bah, shut it off. You know, walk up to, I rap on the door, and I could see, like, the guy in there, and the dog's barking, and the woman, she's like, and I'm like, hi, I'm John, I found a wallet, it's this address. And so the woman comes out, and she's like, oh, thanks a lot. It's our, she rents Efficiency next door, connected to the house, like this little in-law suite. And she goes, She's a drinker. And I'm like, cool. You know, I'm thinking to myself, all right, actually, I'm on my way to an AA meeting. I just found it on the street, and, you know, being the do-gooder that I am, I would take the wallet back and hand it back. So I'm glad. She goes, the woman, she's like, what did you say? I said, yeah, I'm on my way up Allentown Road to an AA meeting. And she's like, do you have a minute? I'm like, sure. And she goes, and she shuts the door, and she comes out walking, and we walk away from her house, and she goes, I've been drinking every day for the last 3 months. I can't put it down. I can't stop drinking. How do you do it? What made you go into AA? And do you have time to talk about it? And I'm like, I feel it right now, man. It's like the goosebumps. It was like, that was why the wallet was there. You know what I mean? Like, I'm such a dork. If I get out of the way and just do what I'm supposed to do anyway, you know what I mean? And we sat and we talked. I got her number. I got her email. She was going away, but then when she gets back, she was going to... I've reached out to her a couple of times. It doesn't matter. I don't know what she's doing today, but I've reached out to her a couple of times. No response, but... That moment was like, oh man, this is unbelievable. Like, it's unbelievable. Just, it's unbelievable. And that's why I don't believe it. Like, sometimes I don't believe it. I don't believe I get to be sober. Like, I didn't have to drink. I don't get hangovers. I don't drink. But not just that. I've got a conscious contact with a God. I get as thirsty for the God thing as I did for that beer or booze or whatever. Whatever. And I was the guy, I'd walk in, I'd be stone cold sober for the day, hungover, but, you know, and after work, I would almost feel better walking in to the bar. Like that, you know what I mean? That, not a drink in me or nothing. I would almost feel better just knowing I was about to. So, it's not just a physical thing, it's a mental thing. When I, like, my mom drinks, she'll have a glass of wine and, like, oh, Mary, do you want another? Oh, no, 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 I'm starting to feel it. I'm like, I'm starting to feel it. You better line two of them up. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't want one. Like, who, I don't know. I don't even trust people who don't drink. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you're down the beach and you meet with your friends, you know, you're making up stories and you meet someone on the beach and you're like, do you party? You know what I mean? Like, are you cool? Like, they're my people. You know what I mean? You're my people. You know what I mean? And so it's a progressive illness. There's a way out. If you got this thing, you know, I wasn't afraid. I mean, I was afraid, but now I'm not afraid, and I'm not embarrassed or ashamed or feel dorky about saying I believe in a higher power. You know what I mean? I trust it. I depend on it. I lean on it. I rely on it. And I just try and help others, not just drunks. You know what I mean? That's hard. Like at work, I spend a lot of time at work, like 8 hours a day. And these people are, I have relationships with all of them. You know what I mean? And like, there's me. You know what I mean? It's easy to go back to the old, you know what I mean? You're not so spiritual sometimes. You know what I mean? It's easy to fall back in there. But like, say, cleaning up a mess that isn't mine and just doing it just for the sake of doing it. Yeah, I have a hard time with that. I want to go, hey, I cleaned up your mess. You know what I mean? Like, what if I just cleaned it up and didn't get caught? You know, I've tried that. It's freaking hard for me, you know. Just little things like that. Little things turn into big things. You know, Greg was up here not too long ago, and he really put it well. Like, it's the little things. It's not the big things. You know what I mean? It's like the opposite. It's like bizarro world. You know what I mean? Like all these little bad decisions based on self that later put me in harm or others and hurt and negative, you know? It's these little positive things that you do along the way that build up. It builds everything. Esteem, character. So it's pretty neat. It's not just a nugget. You know what I mean? There's a whole vein of spiritual juice just waiting for me. You know what I mean? It's just waiting for me. I'm just starting to tap into it. You know what I mean? I got some tools now. You know what I mean? I got some tools to get in there and tap into this stuff. 10 years, relative. You know, I think that's the beginning. For real. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking about the beginning. I think we're all in the beginning of this, really. 80 years. They sat around 80 years ago and they were like, dude, this is working. Let's write a book. Let's write a book and we'll sell the book and we'll open up hospitals. And we'll help more than, you know, there are like 100 dudes sitting around, whatever. And they're like, we can probably help thousands. They had no idea 80 years ago we'd still be doing this. They had no idea 80 years ago there would be millions, you know. We were in Georgia, right? Jackie and I went down to the World Convention, and there was, I don't know, let's say 60, 80,000 sober drunks there. Oxymoron. Sober drunks. That makes sense. Another one. But anyway, they do the Lord's Prayer and the moment of silence, and it was like this. Yeah. That's the juice, man. Thanks for letting me share.